This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Shooter. In across the San Jose blue line. Stops top of the circle, takes a shot through traffic, they score! Dakota Joshua was parked in front. And it finds its way past Vitek Vanacek. The Canucks finally strike. 8:04 into the third, it'll be Joshua's goal, and it's Vancouver 1 and San Jose nothing. Goaltender on the bench, trailing Vancouver 1 to nothing. With 90 seconds left in the third, Hedl turned it over in front of his own net. Toffoli is robbed twice by Demko. He scored on the third chance, and the Sharks tie it at 1 with 1:28 left in regulation time.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
O'Connor going from left to right, a left-hand shot. Picks up the puck at center ice. He's going to cut wide onto the left wing. Slowly in across the San Jose blue line. Now to the faceoff dot. Into the slot. Shoots. He scores! Drew O'Connor on the overtime penalty shot. Wins it for the Canucks. And they're into the final wild card playoff spot in the Western Conference. With a 2-1 victory on the road in San Jose.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks back in the playoff spot, 2 points up on the Calgary Flames after a 2-1 overtime victory over the San Jose Sharks. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to welcome in Randy Janda into the conversation in just a moment. As always, you can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Also, hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650-650, and we'll interact with you throughout the evening here. After a big Canucks victory, it wasn't pretty. It was nerve-wracking. The Canucks didn't help themselves. Made it difficult for themselves in the end. But all that matters, Bick, is that they're now 2 points up on the Calgary Flames, and they picked up another victory without their captain, Quinn Hughes, in the lineup.
Bottom line, baby. They got themselves 2 points. Yeah, it wasn't a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination, but we'll talk about it through the course of the evening. But yes, as it stands right now, they are on 61 points, 2 points ahead of the Calgary Flames. Even on games, they will be one back of the LA Kings. Kings have 3 games in hand, which, by the way, I don't think they get on even footing until like early April. So we're going to be saying Kings have games in hand for some time here. But nevertheless, they have boosted their opportunities here.
And the Canucks have now picked up points in 6 of their last 7 games.
Huge.
Not bad.
It's huge.
Doing
the job, right?
Piling up the points. All right. Let's bring in Randeep into the conversation. Randeep, I mean, it wasn't pretty, but they needed 2 points tonight, and Drew O'Connor finishes things off in overtime. And I know Hedl had a tough time in the, made a mistake late in the third that led to the Toffoli tying goal, but he makes a nice pass to Spring O'Connor, who draws a penalty shot and ultimately wins the game.
Yeah, boys, they won't be sending that game tape to the Hockey Hall of Fame by any stretch of the imagination. But, hey, when you're the Canucks and you need points and you want to be in a playoff position, 2 points matter the most. And you mentioned the two new additions to this team. Drew O'Connor, 6 shots on goal. He was a threat early in this game in tight. I think Brock Besser nearly hit him with a pass that it was just a little behind him. Then after that in the second period, I love that play where he muscles William Eklund off the puck and then eventually gets the puck back, just skating the whole time and creating. And then eventually in the third period, you're right, he gets that goal. But the fact that he's moving his feet all the time, I believe he was the fastest skater tonight, 36 kilometers per hour, the fastest skater on the ice. This guy is all energy, and he's not like Kiefer Sherwood where he's going around hitting people, but he's always first to pucks. He's keeping plays alive, and I like his game early on in a Vancouver Canucks uniform. You mentioned Philip Hedl. Yep, he makes the mistake on that play. He gets a little rush there, maybe panics. That leads to the Toffoli goal. But, guys, what I like about him thus far, he's got a short-term memory, right? Like, a lot of players in that situation maybe let it lurk, let it kind of linger for a little bit where you're just saying, all right, not the most confident. But what happens in overtime? Two plays. One he creates on his own, gets a shot off, and then eventually plays distributor to Drew O'Connor to set up that penalty shot. So I think in this game, if you make a mistake, that's fine. You got to just correct it. You got to make sure that you're able to respond with confidence, and Hedl did that.
Just in general, like, what's your takeaway from this game, Randy? Because I know they weren't perfect, and but it's still like I do view it from like, okay, when did the game feel threatening to go the other direction? And I'm not even sure if I really feel like San Jose, like, took the game to the Canucks. It felt like an underwhelming game by both teams here. Ultimately, Vancouver's the one that comes out on top. But, like, I didn't feel like there was this, like, oh, that's the one that, like, Demko saved from the clutches of defeat there.
Literally, the only chance that you could say maybe was late in the game when it was already 1-1. I think Macklin Celebrini had a chance in tight where he kind of slashed towards the front of the net, and that was late in the game where you're saying, oh, you better make sure you get, you know, the at least a single point out of that. Outside of that, it never felt like it was going to be a real threat. Vancouver, let's be honest, if that power play starts clicking early in this game, this one would have been over. San Jose is not a team that sticks around in games. I thought Vancouver in the third period, though, the fact that San Jose outshot them, what, 16-3? Rick Tocchet probably won't be happy with that, is that you let a team kind of hang out in the game, you leave them, you give them an opportunity just by playing on your heels more, right? So, you know, skating forward to defend was not necessarily a thing in that third period. It wasn't threatening for San Jose, but could it have been maybe put to bed a little bit earlier for Vancouver? I think there's a case there, but let's be honest, San Jose is a team that isn't going to threaten many teams. They are for the fourth time in the last five games they scored two goals or less. So yeah, it's not the biggest of threats overall. I don't think this game was going to be out of reach in any which way, but if you're talking about building habits, Rick Tocchet will probably not prefer that third period.
Absolutely. I don't think he, I mean, we'll hear what he has to say, and maybe he takes a softer approach because they've picked up points in five or six games, and, you know, they have new faces, and the first couple games, a lot of adrenaline, right? And there's still going to be some things they have to work out. No Quinn Hughes or whatever. So we'll see what type of approach he takes, but it wasn't a good enough type of performance that you can get away with against a better opposition, right? Like, you know, Toffoli, you give him enough chances, he's going to score. He finally did. Celebrini had a couple opportunities, but it's not like the Sharks are a high power team, at least not yet. So obviously you're going to have to play a lot better, especially with the Leafs coming in town on Saturday. But I think what continues to be very encouraging is where Thatcher Demko's game has been now. So this is now three games out of his last four where he's had one shutout, and two of those games allowed one or fewer goals, and three of those games has allowed one or fewer goals. And the bad one in there was the Dallas start, and we talked about the one goal maybe you didn't like. But outside of that, you know, we're talking about him starting to find some form here.
Yeah, for sure he is, and he's looking confident. And guys, he didn't have to necessarily save them, to your point, Bick. But in that first period, Will Smith had that opportunity after Derek Forbert falls. There's a transition attack, and there's a couple of chances in tight. He stood up tall on that play. In the third period, the save on Grundstrom with the left pad, like that explosive, hey, if you need me to make a big save, I'm able to do that. That's back with Thatcher Demko over the last two games. So, you know, this is a confident performance, especially that Will Smith chance early on in the game, guys. He didn't see any pucks prior to that one. And then you got three high danger chances right off the bat, and after that, you know, he didn't have to do much again for a while. So I think he's looking comfortable, he's looking confident, you know, he's fighting through traffic. There was another shot a little bit later on in the game where it looked like there was some traffic in front of him, but he fought through that screen, made an difficult save for some goaltenders look pretty easy. And I think with Thatcher, the question of, oh, you know, when's he going to find his game? We're two games in right now, and he looks – I'm not going to say he's back, guys, because, you know, I don't think he's back to the level that we've seen him be a top-two Vezina contender, of course. But this is another performance where we're saying, okay, this reminds us of Thatcher Demko from last year. So he's not maybe officially back, but he's certainly getting closer with every game.
Defensively, we're watching a Quinn Hughes-less world right now. I thought Marcus Pedersen did a couple of nifty things, especially in that second period. But also Philip Pronick on that late penalty kill. It's something Sat and I were going to talk about later. But like another strong, steady game from Pronick.
Yeah, he's starting to – you remember there was the conversation about how can he be a little bit more assertive in games, and whether it's carrying the puck like he did last game with the stretch pass on the second goal, but also on the Jake DeBrus opportunity, just, you know, attacking that empty space. Tonight was a little bit more defensive. Tonight was more patrolling the blue line and being, you know, tougher to play against, whether it was in the corners, whether it's in front of the net. And I think with Hronik, sometimes just a little bit of a break Taking more of an assertive role as your captain needs that break is big. 24 minutes and 31 seconds. He was filling up the shooting lanes as well. He was, you know, active with his stick. And I like that. I think offensively, maybe the power plays were going through a little bit too much through him early on. I'd like to see more activity from the right wall. The left wall, obviously, not having JT Miller on this team anymore, you have to change up the looks. But maybe a little too much activity there. Too much stagnancy or static on the power play. But outside of that, I thought defensively he was strong, and he's growing in confidence more and more. Remember coming back from the injury himself where he missed 20-plus games. It's not going to be immediate for him, but he's really settling into his game right now.
Plus, he was probably the biggest threat on the power play as well.
Sure. Yeah, he hit a post. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, overall, too, for, you know, how the Canucks played tonight, they didn't generate enough chances. And if you, and I know the one player taking a ton of criticism on the text inbox and continues to be Elias Pettersson, number 40, EP 40 for the team. And he just doesn't look to have a lot of confidence either, right, with a puck on a stick, whether it's power play or 5-on-5. And I thought this was pretty jarring. Now, it's interesting because if you look at the fantasy stats for tonight's game, right, Elias Pettersson, 5-on-5, has a second-best Corsi for 69.23% tonight. And when it comes to the expected goals for, that's a lot lower. It's only at 22% because there's only, you know, one chance for. The biggest reason why his expected goals were down, despite, you know, controlling nearly 70% of the shots, guys, is 5-on-5. He was on the ice for zero shots on goal, 5-on-5.
Yeah,
and
that's
he was on he was on the ice for two shots on goal the entire game. Two of those came on the power play. So 5-on-5, they just haven't been able to generate a lot of offense. And again, defensively fine, right? Because they're not giving up anything, and you know, he's getting more shot attempts when he's on the ice than the opposition. But there's just like no offense coming when he's on the ice right now.
Yeah, when you start looking at those numbers, and Sat, as you were doing that, I pulled up some of the numbers as well. The shot attempts and 5-on-5, it's nothing, right? Like there's zero going on there. And, you know, even on the power play, we saw certain moments where it always comes back to moving his feet. Like if he's moving his feet, whether it's in the offensive zone, whether it's on the power play 5-on-5, that's when you generally see the best of him. I saw moments where he was just getting caught by San Jose skaters because he started to glide. He wasn't necessarily, you know, moving his feet, where you contrast with players like Hedl right now or Drew O'Connor. Obviously, they have a different gear that Pettersson doesn't, but they're able to separate from the defenders. They're able to create a little bit room and keep that possession going. And I find that, you know, he's got to be kind of that player that really initiates and drives that line. And 5-on-5, yeah, when there's that many zeros across the board, it's not great. The positive is you get the victory. You're the Vancouver Canucks. You get, you know, another strong effort from outside of one mistake from Filip Hedl. That line's working. But the star player, Pettersson's not really doing it for himself right now. But here's the thing. Connor Garland not really working on that line. Jake DeBrusk, you've got, you know, that trio. Whether it's Besser on that line or Connor Garland on that line, it just feels like it's just kind of stuck there right now. So, yeah, this is something that, you know, you hope the player can get back to their game. They can move their feet more. But it's pretty startling to see that stat line when you start looking at everybody else in shot attempts. You know, that Teddy Bluger line was in double digits. The Pugh Suter line was in double digits. Filip Hedl's line's in double digits. And Pettersson's line's not even close to being in double digits.
Yeah, the best flash he would have had is like he picked off a pass in the offensive zone like deep, but it's not like he's not skating for that. And
he set up Nils Höglander on
that
shot. Yeah,
on a shot that was blocked by Liljegren. But yeah, like that's really about it.
And to be fair, Bick, on that shift, that was Will Smith giving the puck away, and he'd been on the ice for a minute 15. Like that was, I think that was a tired mistake more than a puck pursuit play by, you know, Pettersson. So to the point is you got to move your feet. You got to have defenders backing up. And right now, they're tracking him down pretty easy. And that's where I think if you're a creator or, you know, a distributor or a guy that's going to get your shot off, you need to create your own shot. If you're not moving your feet, you're not going to be able to do any of that.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, something that it comes down to in a big way. And, you know, we talked about Filip Hedl initially, and I thought the first period, the first couple shifts he had, he was tremendous again, created a couple scoring chances. Yep. I mean, he could have easily had a goal and an assist tonight. And this is what the Canucks really petering off as the game went on. Didn't really generate much late in the game either. He was still, even as the game went on, like, he made some mistakes. And tonight, he had some moments, right, where it's like, okay, you can see some of the reads aren't great. You can see that sometimes, even on the empty net, I know, Bick, you were kind of pointing out that maybe he's not pressuring as much up ice as he should be, maybe letting off too much, allowing guys to go too easily through the neutral zone.
He essentially skated all the way down to the top of the circles.
Right.
And then I don't know if someone was calling him back because he shoulder checked and then went below the red line. And San Jose was able to gather all their speed all the way up into the red line.
Yeah, so a little passive, right?
Yeah.
But so you had some moments where, okay, you saw, like, the first two games, all we saw was a great. And there was a couple of moments, too. He drew a penalty tonight, but it's also one of those moments where it's like he's so reckless with how he goes all over the ice, which is fantastic, but he exposes himself to potential injury doing that. And, you know, he got blown up before. So you're starting to see certain cracks, right? And just, when I want to say, I don't mean to be critical of the guy, but you're starting to see, okay, we saw some great things, and now you're seeing some of the things that, okay, obviously he can improve on. But I love the fact that he got sent, like, Tocchet sent him out there the first shift in overtime, right? He makes a great play to Drew O'Connor. You just don't want to see a guy like that lose confidence. And what I was impressed by was, despite all that, and despite giving the puck away, this was a guy, when he had a chance in overtime, wanted to make up for it.
For sure. And that's a confidence thing, right? Where when he's got the puck on his stick that much, guys, you know, you got to have a certain level of confidence. And remember, you know, he's playing behind Trocheck and Zibanejad in New York at that point, where you probably feel like you're not getting enough opportunity. He's hit the ground running in Vancouver. And I'm with you. I think, you know, if you hear some of the comments that Rick Tocchet's made, he's really happy with the way he's playing. But certainly there's some things he wants to clean up. He's kind of alluded to that in passing in some scrums as well. So as a coach, of course, you know, there's things you want to clean up just a little bit. But the biggest worry for me and Filip, when it comes to Filip Hedl, is I love that he handles the puck. I love that he's not afraid to hit those areas with speed. But, man, he exposes himself sometimes too, right, where you're just saying, okay, if there's a certain defender out there, I really, really hope that, you know, you're able to protect yourself a little bit more too. So I love that, you know, he's able to play this way. He's able to initiate. His chemistry with O'Connor looks good too, because both of these guys, can play fast. So, you know, you like to see that. And even that little play where, you know, early on in this game where O'Connor makes the play in the neutral zone, he gets it to Hedl. Hedl gets it to Brock Besser. Like, a good chemistry between all three of them. And the first two shifts of the game for that line were dominant. So I think there's a lot to work with there. But of no doubt, with Filip Hedl, he does freestyle a little bit. And whenever you freestyle in the middle of the ice, you got to keep your head up too.
You do, and that's one thing you don't want to see is him get blown up and injured, of course. But yeah. Another overall ambitious performance from Filip Hedl, and it's good to see. And the Canucks did get the victory, 2-1 overtime over the Sharks. Randy, great stuff as always, man. And I guess we won't chat with you until after the Four Nations, so stay out of trouble, okay?
That's right, boys. I will. I'll be calling the game in a different language. So you'll. I'm assuming you'll have Landon with you on Saturday night. But yeah, enjoy the break as well. I know you guys will be working, but if you get a chance to get some time off, hope you enjoy it.
Yeah,
take a break. You guys work too hard.
Yeah, I'll be around. I know Bick's gonna go slack off, but thanks, Randy.
Attaboy.
Cheers, boys. You got it. That is your game review. Need more power and efficiency in your lineup? Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Hybrid with rates from 2.49%. Visit bchonda.ca. Keep your thoughts coming in through our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. Before we go to the phone lines, Bick, a lot popping in the text inbox. And it's a combination of, you know, happiness, because the Canucks won the game, of course. Obviously, a lot of Elias Pettersson criticism as well.
I was going to say, it's only a combination of happiness. Yeah, 2 points. And, hey, let me text it about Pettersson.
Yeah, I mean,
It is turning a little bit into the post-Pettersson show here.
Yeah, and honestly, the Canucks won this hockey game. I don't want to spend the entire post-game show just ripping on Pettersson, but obviously we spoke about it first. You know, not a single shot on goal while he was on the ice 5-on-5.
For his teammates, too.
For his teammates, too. Like, nobody got... Yeah. And again, like, it's not like they didn't generate anything. They had a couple chances, but you got nothing on goal, right? It's ultimately... You have to start getting some of those chances at the very least before you start scoring some goals. At the same time, I see a lot of the frustration. I get it, and we'll get to do all this as the show goes on here. I did like how a guy like Drew O'Connor was able to use his speed in overtime and have that ability, like having Filipito. The thing I loved the most was the fact that he wanted to make up for it in overtime. We didn't see him shy away from the moment. And sometimes on this team, somebody makes a mistake, they all squeeze the stick. They get kind of shy down. They shrink. They can't rise to that moment. You saw a player just shake it off right away, and I was really impressed by that from Hedl.
Yeah, certainly. And even with overtime here, right? This is the first overtime with these new guys in the lineup. So suddenly, actually, I guess the Detroit game, the speed was noticeable for those guys to be in that spot here. I just like you see the difference, too, of how quickly Hedl and O'Connor just show out there. And, you know, when it was Miller and Besser, you know, playing in OT, a lot of link play, they get into the zone, a lot of looping and trying to just craft that one moment, that one shot. But here's loose puck, go. And O'Connor beats the guys up the ice, Hedl's carrying it, and there's that opportunity to get created. You know, 3-on-3 is meant to be exciting and energetic, and you see that little bit with O'Connor there.
Yeah, you do. And honestly, when it's funny, because if we were doing a live stream, when he started taking the penalty shot, I'm like, use your speed. Like, why are you slowing down? Like, your assets, your speed.
And it's the changeup.
And then he, yeah, I mean, I guess so, right? And goes wide, goes slow, but then, you know, he snipes it past Vanecek and gets the Canucks the win, right? So,
but just going back to Hedl really quickly, too, it really does seem like he's not going to be short on confidence. So, like, as you mentioned, is he going to make a mistake and squeeze the stick? Like, again, it wasn't the right play, trying to pass it to Forbert and all that, but that's a whole heck of a lot of moxie there for Filipino. And then immediately rebound. He's got some Jameis Winston in it of like, I'll make the mistake, but I'm throwing the next one too.
I'm not worried about it. Yeah. No, I like that.
30 touchdowns and 30 turnovers.
This text says, Hedl started overtime because who else was going to? Pedersen? I'm running out of reasons to be optimistic about Pedersen.
Fair point.
Ever returning to form at this point at a 56-point pace, like carrying a $6-7 million dead cap hit, that is. Satan and Marple texting in. So, you know, it's one of those things, right? Like, I get it, and I see a lot of people. Somebody's like, no, spend the whole post-game show ripping on Pedersen. Somebody else texted in and said, honestly, I'm this is my last text about Pedersen. At least, I don't know if he's going to find his game, but at least Thatcher Demko played well. One of the funniest texts, and it wasn't funny, but it was just kind of funny to see because it seems like everybody is frustrated with Pedersen. It was Doc from the Doc texting in and saying, I've had it. I had to text in and give you my thoughts, and just like rips on Pedersen and says, if Pedersen is worth 11.6 per year, Hughes is worth $125 million per year. And he's like, I just had to get it off my chest.
Might not be wrong with that Hughes take, though.
Yeah, it might not be wrong. All the cap
space. Cap's going up, man.
Give him all. But it's like, yeah, we're getting a lot of these, but you know, people are clearly frustrated, right? And even people who haven't texted in, because we see when you text in from a number, like we see all the texts you sent in. So I see the first time texters, and there are a lot of first time texters being like, "What's going on here? Like, what's happening?" So everyone's exasperated, and like we're out of answers to these things. I asked Patrick Alvin point blank today, right? Is he injured? And Alvin didn't quite answer he answered the question. He said,
may have answered the question indirectly by not answering the question.
Yeah, so what he said was he had an upper body injury, he missed some games, and he's been available for every other game. That's how he answered the question. I asked directly, is he injured, right? So, and we've talked about the speed aspect, and he doesn't have the same pace, and, you know, talked about preparedness, which is the thing, like, again, multiple things can be true at the same time. Like, clearly there might be something hindering him, and the team felt like he didn't do enough to prepare himself. And based on how he's played, he doesn't look like a prepared hockey player. Like, he doesn't, right? Like, confidence, Henrik Sedin always said, comes from your preparedness.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not confident, it's because your preparedness wasn't good enough. Now, that might be too much of a blanket statement, because things are more gray than that generally. But I do understand the point, and I think it applies to Pedersen here. Yes, you were injured, but did you do enough to prepare yourself to fight through it and play through it this year? Now, the other question is, should he be playing through it? We don't know the nature of it. Should the team have given him more time off? Like, we don't know the answers to this. But I'm out of, like, we don't know the answers 100%. I'm out of reasons. People text in, what if the Four Nations is what brings him along? I mean, I hope so. But that's grasping at straws,
right?
Are
you more nervous if you're Team Sweden right now or Patrick Alvin?
I mean, Team Sweden's lost William Karlsson.
Yeah.
You know, they've had goalies injured. Pedersen's not playing to his level. Yeah.
It's rather fortunate it's not the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
Because they'd be like, oh, man, we're really in a tough spot here. But, yeah, it is really tough here. And you're right. Like, we are out of solutions here of how to internally solve the problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about this, like, as soon as they made the JT Miller trade, it's like, oh, here we go, 32-game audition. Like, I'm not even sure if 32 games is enough to restore your faith of, like, oh, okay, he's done that, and so we feel better.
Yeah.
Now you got 28 games. Like, I don't know if 28 games is enough of a runway.
And it's frustrating because, like, you know, last year was, okay, hey, get an offseason, hopefully you'll be better next year. And it's like, are we back to saying the same thing now?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, it does.
It really does, right?
And it, honestly, it comes down to, like, your level of faith in, like, the entire evaluation process to look at and say, like, oh, yeah, look, this guy has done this, and we always believed in that level of player, and is it going to return? Like, I go back to that moment. It was about 2 minutes left in the second period, and there was a turnover, not by him, but it's going back the other way. And he turns, goes to accelerate back up ice, and, like, it's
the power's just not there, right?
It's as if there's no gas in the engine.
And we talked to, yeah.
And it's about, like, 25, 30 seconds into the shift, and, like, there's no acceleration whatsoever. And it's just, like, one of those things of, like, did he dip his head? He's like, I don't know if I can do this. And you can just see, like, I can see, like, the effort to try to accelerate, but then it doesn't happen. Then you can see he's like, I got to glide here.
Yeah.
And it sucks. Like, it sucks watching that. To see a guy who, like, is good defensively and commits to that side of the ice offer nothing in that moment. And, like, we're getting a lot of texters like, he's got to be hurt. Like, come on. Like, Luis, we all see this. And, like, the thing I always go back to is, okay, like, if you're hurt, you have to find a way. Like, you're still in the lineup. You're still playing tonight.
Almost 20 minutes.
It was 1937?
Yeah, like, almost 20 minutes.
1933.
Yeah.
So, there's 17 skaters relying on you to do something in 19 minutes and 33 seconds. So you might have to find a way to influence the game differently. You might have to play differently, but it looks like he's trying to play like a 60% version of himself. When if you're hurt and you're still out there, like, find a different way to influence the game.
Yeah.
Because it can't look like this.
No, but he's also not handling the puck with confidence either.
And like, that's the thing.
That goes back to, like, all of it. It's kind of unraveling, right? Like, it's not getting better, and it's tough. And, you know, John was texting in and saying, I love the game tonight. I love the effort. I'm so hyped about O'Connor and how these guys are playing, but I just don't believe in the one guy. And it's like, everyone's text a lot. Of, like, there's some that Gersh texted in and said, leave PD alone. Let's talk about the win.
You know what? We absolutely
will. But it's
genuinely 90% text about Pettersson right now.
Bick, like
every
2 seconds.
I'm not even joking.
Every second of text is coming in. I'm looking at it. It keeps moving. And it's like, Pettersson, he shouldn't play in Four Nations. This is Jack Eichel 2.0. Would benching Pettersson work? PD got paid. Bench Pettersson. EP40.
Must be nice coming in about Pettersson right now.
It's unreal. Like, I'm looking at, like, 40 texts in a row that have come in the last 30, like, 45 seconds, and every single one is Pettersson.
Yeah, and the one you read, there's like, it's Jack Eichel 2.0. It's like, well, the lesson of Jack Eichel 2.0 is
don't
stick by Jack Eichel. Like, Jack Eichel, like, there was games in Buffalo where, like, Jack Eichel couldn't turn.
Yeah.
Like, it was difficult to watch, and it was almost like, wow, like, here's a guy that was, like, legitimately close to Connor McDavid. That's like, it was still a reward to finish second in that draft class. And it's like, wow, what a completely, like, fallen star here. That's a sad story. And someone was, like, willing to take the bet and, like, well, I'll take Jack Eichel. If you don't believe in the surgery, I'll try to believe in the surgery. And it's revamped everything.
He had to have the surgery, though. But, like, what the thing with Pettersson is, we don't know what the issue is.
Sure. But, like, you go watch those final Buffalo
but
Jack Eichel
I know,
games.
But you knew exactly what the issue was.
Yes.
You knew it was a neck injury, and he had to fix it. What is the issue here? Nobody will admit to it.
Sure.
Pettersson mentioned knee, but we don't know for sure.
Because mm-hmm.
nobody's really said it. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. Let's take a phone call before we hit the break, and let's go to Jared in Surrey. Drew O'Connor, a big overtime goal. The Canucks won this game, but yet the conversation's Pettersson. But the Canucks won. Jared, what's going on, buddy? What are your thoughts here tonight?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Drew O'Connor. We don't need to talk about Pettersson anymore. It feels like banging my head into the wall, but Drew O'Connor's exciting, so I want to talk about him. First off, I don't blame Shorty for calling him Dickinson because we've had, like, so many number 18s. I don't blame him. But I just wanted to talk about how I think Elliot reported that multiple teams were in on Drew O'Connor. So I'm thinking maybe we overlooked this guy in the deal because obviously a lot of us wouldn't know much about him. So I wanted to see mainly what an extension would look like and what you guys think would look like for him. So, yeah.
Appreciate the phone call, man. Thanks. I think as far as an extension for Drew O'Connor, Jared and Surrey calling in, I think it's a fair question. based on where the market is going, based on his profile, the fact he had 16 goals a couple of years ago, I'm looking at somewhere probably around $2 million per year. So Kiefer Sherwood got 1.5, but he didn't have the same scoring rates as Drew O'Connor, and we'll see where he finishes the season. But I'd imagine he'd probably want somewhere close to what Heinen got, 2.25, $2 million to 2.25 per year.
Yeah, I apologize. I haven't run perfect Drew O'Connor comps.
Yeah, but I think
yet.
It's somewhere in that range. I think if you're looking at 2 to 3 years, $2 million per year, I'd say that's the range, maybe slightly more. Now, there are a lot of teams that have been after him, so there could be interest.
I was going to say, does he look at Dakota Joshua and is like, hey, look, that guy had an 18-goal season. I had a 16-goal season.
I'm not touching that. If he wants $3 million, thank you, goodbye.
Sure, no, like, look, mind you, there. He's having a much far more down year, right? Like 16 a year ago versus
and he was more
Joshua.
Physical. Yeah. But I don't, but I'd say somewhere in the $2 million range.
Yeah, I'd have to
look at the numbers.
But $2 million sounds right.
Just about that. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of them. We'll get to more of your phone calls. We'll hear from the Canucks head coach after a Canucks 2-1 win over the San Jose Sharks in San Jose. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. A satin bake on the home of your Canucks. More next on Sportsnet 650.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's the second career penalty shot for Drew O'Connor. He hasn't scored on one before, but he's got a chance to win it for his new team in overtime on a penalty shot. O'Connor going from left to right, a left-hand shot. Picks up the puck at center ice. He's going to cut wide onto the left wing. Slowly in across the San Jose blue line. Now to the faceoff dot. Into the slot. Shoots. He scores! Drew O'Connor on the overtime penalty shot. Wins it for the Canucks. And they're into the final wild card playoff spot in the Western Conference. With a 2-1 victory on the road in San Jose.
Late night drama in San Jose. A little bit too much excitement maybe for Rick Tocchet as the game turned pretty late with a tying goal by Toffoli, but an excellent job by the two speedsters for the Vancouver Canucks, Philip Hedel and Drew O'Connor, to create chances in overtime. And Drew O'Connor going left and then cuts back to the middle of the ice and goes glove hand side on Vanacek.
Welcome back to the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Drew O'Connor finishing things off in overtime for the Canucks. Gets a penalty shot, draws the penalty after getting set up with a nice pass from Philip Hedel, and does not make a mistake, giving the Canucks the victory. And it was Dakota Joshua who opened up the scoring for the Canucks, too. And you know what, Bick? Like that was one of the funnier parts about the Canucks on the power play tonight. They had four power plays. They spent almost 8 minutes on the power play. And for 7 minutes and 59 seconds, they were dreadful. Like, terrible on the power play. But all it took was 1 second, the last second they had, Pugh Suter throwing a shot on goal and Dakota Joshua deflecting it, and they get a power play goal. So, hey, terrible power play, four opportunities, one good moment, and you end up with the victory eventually in overtime. So I don't like the power play, but at least they got a bottom line in the 1 second that was left on the clock.
And actually, nice work by those two in that moment. Should we get into the goal, or should we save it?
You know what? Let's save the goals because
we got to save every last goal for the goals tonight.
We have three goals to talk about. So those are three precious minutes that we have for a bit later on in the show. Before we go to the phone boards, and we are going to go to the coach in a minute, Bick, the text inbox is, there's tons. I mean, we read a bunch of the Pettersson ones, right? And there's so many coming in, people saying first time texter, they have to trade them. And there's one after another. There is the odd one that comes in and says, the fans have to be more supportive. Like, why are you guys driving this guy out of town? He's clearly injured. Leave the guy alone. I'm sick of hearing about this. So you're getting a little bit of that, but it's clear a lot of, like, Hans even says healthy scratch. I mean, just one after another. But besides the Pettersson stuff, Bick, what are you seeing on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox? Can you find anything without it? Okay, I put a couple in.
Oh, boy.
Let me see if I can find them before you do.
This one's... I'm trying to craft a trivia question here.
Okay, well, you think about that.
Yeah.
Jake in Nanaimo says, I was calling for Jonathan Lekromäki or Carlson over Niels Ullmann. A little more scoring punch would have helped tonight, especially on the pathetic power play. That's Jake in Nanaimo. This one says, Tatiana Maple Ridge. Feels good that we got to score a penalty shot on OT on a Wallman team this time. O'Connor should have hit the gritty. Tatiana from Maple Ridge. That's a clever one. And, you know, are you still crafting your trivia question here, or do you have it figured out?
I don't know. I have it now.
Okay, so considering Tatiana mentioned the O'Connor overtime shootout, I mean, overtime penalty shot goal, you have a overtime Canucks penalty trivia question.
I believe, too, like I've double-checked this through the NHL records here. There have only been, until tonight, 18 overtime penalty shot goals in NHL history.
Mm.
Now 19 with Drew O'Connor.
Okay.
One of the other 18 is a Vancouver Canuck.
One of the other 18 is a Vancouver Canuck? Okay. Can you give us the year the Canucks scored?
It's recent. It's okay. Recent.
How recent?
Like, within the last 10 years. Like, this player, I believe, is still playing right now.
Is he?
Yeah. So I pose that to the listeners.
Is he playing in the NHL?
Yeah. He's again, not played a lot this year, but he's still in the league. Again, so that's the trivia question. Now 19 OT penalty shot goals. 19. One of the previous 18 was a Vancouver Canuck. Vancouver Canuck has scored one of the previous 18. Text in 650-650 who it was.
All right. Interesting stuff.
There you
All
go.
Right. Let us know. Dunbar Lumber, 650-650. Some trivia for you here. I'm not going to guess because it's for the people that he's putting it out there.
Yeah. Satnos.
Yeah. Gene from Strawberry Hill says, we don't need another Pettersson to play defense. We need EP40 to score. He looks lost. So again, like, here's another Pettersson text. I'm trying to find ones that aren't, but there you go. Ben in Richmond says, this game felt like another example of the Canucks playing to their opponent's level instead of driving their own game forward. The counterexample of this theory would be Edmonton or Toronto wins in January. Ben in Richmond wants the Canucks to keep playing up to their opponent, not down to their opponent. We'll get to more of your texts here, but let's go to the phone boards to take a phone call here before we get to the head coach, and let's go to San Jose. Where we have Connor on the line. Connor, thanks for calling in. And what are your thoughts here tonight?
No, I mean, first of all, thank you guys. I'm a Vancouverite who lives in the Bay Area now, and I mean, your guys' show keeps me alive. I listen to all your guys' shows on Spotify.
Love it.
And I love you guys.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
But on the O'Connor thing, like, I just feel like, I mean, is this just another Tocchet winger? I mean, like, we have so many guys that move through the system now that Tocchet loves, and at the end of the day are guys that serve to beat the American. And I'm not saying that's O'Connor, but, you know, I mean, I've seen PDG come through and stuff like that, guys like that. And it's almost like, what do we think? Do we think he's going to stick around, or do we think he's going to go to Abbey? Yeah, I just would love to hear your guys' analysis of that. Because, I mean, he's a great skater, and he gives Mikheyev vibes without the, you know, terrible injuries. So I just love to hear your guys' views on if O'Connor's going to stick in the lineup or, you know, go down to Abbey.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. I mean, O'Connor's not going down to Abbey.
No,
he's going to stay here.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the thing, and he's not wrong, because we've seen, you know, some wingers come in, like Heinen. There was hope that he would do something, and hasn't quite worked out, right? Some of the other players, we saw Mikheyev the first year he was good here under Tocchet. It wasn't as good last year, and ultimately ends up getting traded. So I get the question about it. I think Drew O'Connor has far better staying power to be in the NHL. Like, he's not being sent down. But I do think it's fair. Is he going to score enough for you to feel good about signing him to an extension? Does that matter enough to you? Like, if you're signing him to an extension worth $2 to $2.5 million for 3 years, is he going to give you enough of these performances where you feel good about it? Or are the Canucks going to be looking to rotate through these guys? Because they've rotated through these guys quite a bit.
I mean, he brought two and change is so, like, marginal that I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, but that's what they did with Heinen, and they still flipped them,
right?
The
difference that stands out, though, is he's got way more noticeable pop to Heinen.
He's bigger and faster.
If he gets reduced to, like, a third, fourth line role, which Heinen had to do through times this year, you're going to get the thing that you want. Like, one of the reasons I was excited about Heinen is I thought there'd be more juice and more pop there, even off of, like, the plays along the wall he was very slick at. But, like, that is only going to get you so far here.
Yeah.
You need to bring that energy element, too. And certainly, like, Drew O'Connor, like, has that in spades for just the very first cameo here. And also, like, the other edge that he's got on Danton Heinen is also the size,
yeah,
too, right?
100%.
Again, it's Danton Heinen was like 6'1", 6'2". O'Connor feels like 6'3", 6'4". And like the reach really, really plays
here. He's not
here.
Physical, but he's fast and he's good on the forecheck.
And,
right?
he
fights through contact.
Managed to send people the long way around. And it's very noticeable.
And if he can continue skating fast, that's something the Canucks need in their lineup, right? And
desperately.
In a big way. Let's take one more call. Let's go to Montreal where we have James on the line. James, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
You guys are awesome.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
First and foremost, I don't want to go on this. I call him a WD-40 because he's a little rusty. You know what I'm talking about? EP-40. Yeah. Right. I listen, long story short, overpaid. Way overpaid. My question to you guys, I don't want to go into too many details on this particular player and, you know, bore your show or what have you. I have one comment and then one question. My comment is, or my perspective as a couch GM would be P. Suter. I think this guy's underrated. I think this guy brings a lot to the table for the salary that he's given. I think he's been very good. That being said, what do we have to do? I don't want to be a mediocre team, maybe making the playoffs. If you compare ourselves to last year where we were like dynamite, and this year it's like, you know, I listened to your last couple of shows. I listened to every show, actually. And it's, you know, how do we evaluate EP in the next three games? And the Canucks have 3 wins in a row or 2 wins in a row. And, like, can we go for another win? And, like, what do we have to do to, like, I don't want to be that last wild card spot.
Yeah.
What is your opinion? You're prepared. You guys are awesome. You know your hockey. Hands down, you guys know your hockey. So my question to you guys is, what do we have to do? Do we have to trade a guy who's worth $11.5 million to get, you know, maybe trade him, free up maybe $6 million on the cap and get a draft pick? Or, you know, we obviously have to fill in that gap. So
right. What
do we have to do going forward?
Yeah.
And I'm talking about this year and next year. What do we have to do so we're not to that wild card spot, if we're going to be that wild card spot? Do we have to do? That's my question to you guys.
All right,
you guys are awesome. I'll leave you with that. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Appreciate the phone call. And what they need another impact forward. There's no doubt, right?
Like, yeah.
We'll get to Pettersson in a second, but they need to add another impact forward. Now, if Hedl can be an actual second line center or top two center, then maybe it's a winger you find. And if you're not keeping Besser, you got to replace Besser. So you might need two impact forwards, depending on what you do with Besser, right? On Pettersson, what complicates all this is, unless you can find a trade where you're getting real value back, just getting cap space isn't good enough, because you have to find, like, Pettersson's getting 11.6 because they thought he's a franchise center. If you're trading Pettersson, you have to find a pathway to find another franchise center, and you might already be looking for a second line center. It's very hard for you to thread the needle having traded JT and then trading Pettersson too. The best trade for the Canucks can make is Pettersson finding his old game. But how much confidence do you have in him doing so? If you look at historical performances, you look at his rates, everything points to him figuring it out. Like, the odds are heavily in the favor of Pettersson figuring it out. But the resolve and waiting for that to happen is very difficult because we're over a year of him struggling.
Yeah, I was listening to Jamie Dodd on the way in today on Canucks Talk. And again, like, the way it was phrased, I thought this was a nice way of looking at it. Like, what is your most negative projection, like, percentage of how, if Elias Pettersson finds his game again? Like, scale of 0 to 100%. Like, what's your most negative outlook on it?
Like, you mean if he finds his game?
Yeah. Like we see the old Pettersson. Like, your most negative outcome is what?
Like, being a point per game and being good defensively?
But what percentage of a chance would you say, like, that happens again?
Probably, like, I'd probably put it at, like, 70%, 75%.
Your most negative outcome is 70% he reclaims his game?
I think the baseline of his game, to me, was, like, a point per game. Like,
yeah.
I have a 70% certainty he's going to find that. Is it going to be in Vancouver or not? That I don't know.
Sure.
But I think, like, him finding that baseline, I think there's, like a 70% chance. That's how I feel about him finding his game.
Negative percentage?
Yeah.
Like, really?
I don't see it. Like, I don't see it happening right now in Vancouver.
Well, then this is going to be terrible for my point.
But, okay,
again,
but go ahead.
To Jamie's point was like, okay, let's say we gave it a 5% chance.
Right.
Right? That he gets back to maybe not 11.6, but like the... Like
I said point
80,
per game. Yeah. Like, be a point per game.
Let's say 85-point guy, sure, and like two-way force and all that. Like, even just that. Okay, let's say 5% chance. Is your... To what all the things you just talked about of threading the needle, is that greater than 5%? No. I don't know if it is.
It's not. It's less.
Yeah.
Because like, if you're looking at a draft pick, the pick's going to take years. That's even if the right guy you get, if you get the right guy. If you want a guy who's going to be a hit right away, like a Celebrini, you got to pick first.
Which you kind of, by the way, like need to do now because you're on this window of convince Quinn Hughes.
They would, yes. Which so, makes, they, so for you to, it's not just finding a draft pick. You got to find somebody that can be good right away. And I'm not against it. I'll trade anybody. Yeah. But because of how poor he's been, because of his salary, because of how hard it is to find guys, and if you already traded JT, it puts you in a really tough spot. It puts you in a really difficult spot. All right, we'll delve into this a bit more, but let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Canucks win tonight, 2-1 over the Sharks in San Jose. Drew O'Connor with a penalty shot goal. And here is Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town.
Well, Rick, obviously a nice win, and Drew O'Connor to just top things off there. What can you say about him and clearly the addition he has been?
Yeah, obviously the speed. You know, he really adds a lot to our team. You know, that was obviously a big goal for us. But, you know, just real coachable kid. You know, he wants to learn. And just, I know he's only been here a week, 2 weeks, but he's just a really good coachable kid.
Took a while to just find the back of the net. Can you attribute some of that to a bit of a goaltending battle tonight?
Yeah, both. I mean, Dimer was great. So was their goaltender. We had some possession time. Some block shots. I think we could have got the puck to the net a little bit more, but it's a grindy game. Like, it was one of those games. You know, I don't think we gave him a lot, but when we did, Demmer was there. He made some great saves for us. So, yeah, you got sometimes in an A2 game schedule, you're going to have these games. You have to grind it and find a way to win.
Two wins now without your captain in the lineup. What can you say just in terms of guys just stepping up?
Yeah, I mean, that's our team. We're going to, you know, we can't really have passengers. You know, we need everybody to contribute, you know, whether you play 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or whatever. You know, I thought, like, Hoglander was really good tonight. You know, I thought guy Amund gave us a job. Teddy's line was good. I thought those guys really did a nice job for us.
An overtime win.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while. We'll take it. We'll take it. Yeah, it's been a while.
What does it mean for a group when you have new guys and they all contribute early on within the first week?
Yeah, I think it's important to make them feel, you know, welcome, first of all. Try to easy transition. You know, it's one thing with the organization that when guys get traded, they really try to take care of them, try to them to just think about hockey, not stuff off the ice. But yeah, they've been at the rinks, a lot of smiles. So yeah, it's good. It's been a nice feeling.
I think you said after the last game you felt like Joshua had been coming on the last couple of games. You feel like that's just another product of tonight?
I thought Dak, his last 3-4 games is coming, like his old self. So he's got some jump. You know, guys like him, he's starting to go. I mean, Pew Suter's playing really well for us. I mean, guys like that are really stepping up for us.
Speaking of old self, Thatcher Demko, back-to-back games now.
Yeah, I think the last 3-4 weeks, just in practice, the games he's played, you know, he's getting some traction on him. He's playing really well for us. He's, you know, he's a world-class goalie. He's played a lot of great hockey games for Vancouver Canucks. So I've always expected Demmer to play that way. He's that good of a goaltender.
As we talked about Drew tonight, but obviously big 48 hours for a lot of the big additions with Marcus signing his new contract as well. How excited are you to have him around for the foreseeable future?
Well, you can just see him settle things down. You know, he does the subtle plays out there. He's a leader in the room. I mean, it's just not on the ice, it's off the ice why, you know, we signed him. It was a commitment from the organization right away, and that's big when you can do that. And he wanted to, you know, he wanted to play for the Vancouver Canucks. So, I think that's why it took, you know, 5-6 days of negotiations because both sides wanted to, you know, get it done.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium after 2-1 victory in overtime over the San Jose Sharks. And from vision to reality, Tile Town has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And obviously, you know, we talked about earlier with Randy, perhaps a coach wouldn't love some of the aspects of their game tonight and losing the lead late. And yeah, there are things he didn't like, but he liked the fact that they found a way to win this game. And for a team that's had so much trouble winning overtime games this year, he's like, it's been a while. We'll take it. It doesn't matter. And I think sometimes we found so many ways to lose games late, lose a lead, go to overtime, don't pick up the 2 points. Just finding a way to get it and move forward can just be a good mental block to come over, because it just felt like the Canucks weren't going to win games in overtime this season.
Yeah, they were really struggling. You can even just hear the relief. It was like, oh, yeah, huge, huge. Yeah, you know, we chat about this too. Like, is there a, letdown spot before a big game versus the Maple Leafs on Saturday. You know, you're going to be in that primetime spot. And as a lot of people have texted in, they play down to their opponent. And, yeah, like there's not a lot to take out of this. And, you know, even just hearing Rick talk it there, like, how much emphasis did he really put into, like, this moment? And, you know, he's usually pretty descriptive, but, like, the best we got there is, like, Demko, world-class goalie.
Yeah.
World-class goalie.
World-class
goalie. From Thatcher Demko.
Do you want to do the trivia answer now or after?
Okay, so I screwed up. Not that the answer was wrong or the question was wrong. I didn't realize Shorty said it on the broadcast.
Oh, okay.
So everyone has texted in the answer. They're like, Shorty said it. I was like, oh, my bad.
Okay, there you go.
We're doing hundreds of things during the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
But it was Ben Hutton in 2016 versus Arizona. Shout out to T in New West, who's the quickest on the texting.
Yeah, I mean,
was the first one in. But there was a lot of correct
people answers. Would be amazed how much time we spend re-watching plays. And like, because it sounds off when we re-watch on our laptops. So like, you know, we're rewatching a lot, but not hearing a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, Pick, you're an idiot for so many other reasons. Tonight, it's because you didn't listen to Shorty.
Well, you know.
It's like, I try not to most times.
You know he's going to text you about
that. It's because he's listening right now, ladies and gentlemen. He's going to text you
about
that,
too. We love Shorty. He's the best. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text box, also on the phone boards. We'll get to more of your reaction. That's coming up next on the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next in the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Tying seconds of the power play. Myers, left wing for Suter. In across the San Jose blue line. Stops off of the circle, takes a shot through traffic. They score! Dakota Joshua was parked in front. And it finds its way past Vitek Vanacek. The Canucks finally strike. 8:04 into the third. It'll be Joshua's goal, and it's Vancouver 1 and San Jose nothing.
I thought Dak, his last 3-4 games is coming, like his old self. So he's got some jump. You know, guys like him, he's starting to go. I mean, Pew Suter's haven't been playing really well for us. I mean, guys like that are really stepping up for us.
Canucks, big victory. 2-1 over the San Jose Sharks in overtime. Somebody was saying, like, well, it's the Sharks. You can't be excited. Well, a win is a win, and the Canucks are in a playoff spot all of a sudden, and they have to pick up all the wins they can find, they can get between now and the end of the season. 2 points up on the Calgary Flames, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. Wrapping up a couple thoughts from the head coach. He mentioned Dakota Joshua, his game coming around. And Josh in Mission agrees. I agree with Dak. I think he's been finding his game the last 3 to 4 games. I agree with Talkit. That's Josh in Mission texting in and others being happy with how Dakota Joshua played. And, you know,
this was definitely the best game in a while.
It was, right? Yeah. And I think what stood out was, and we pointed this out during the intermission, that his speed was faster tonight. Like, he hit his top speed for the year, but he was also doing it consistently. Like, it wasn't just like he had a burst and one shift where he looked quick and then he didn't have it the rest of the game. He was consistently skating well, getting in on the forecheck. He was showing nice hands, making some plays, and got the goal in front of the net as well. You hope he gained some confidence because he can be such a difference maker for this team. We saw it last season, and that's why he earned that contract.
Well, even on the goal, like, I love, he was the last one to tag up. It's just a neutral zone regroup.
Well,
right?
Let's,
like,
get to the goals here then. Yeah.
It's just a regroup, and he's the deepest one in the zone, so he's got to work to get in and then first to the net as well. And you watch, like, I like the way Suter just pulls up and it just buys Joshua enough time to get to the front of the net, and the far post shooting lane is taken away, so Suter just gets it on net. And Joshua's there in front of the net and is able to tip that 5-hole. But, like, it's a lot of work for him to get back, tag up, and then get to the front of the net. So, hey, like, credit to him. Like, there's that little bit of burst, and you see the long speed there for Joshua to get to those two spots.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a great, and it wasn't anything too special about it. You mentioned as far as how the playing came together, and like we mentioned, the Canucks, it was the last second of their power play, and they had 4 power plays, and they were, I mean, the first power play they had, they moved the puck around decently. There was one good shot.
It was all on the outside. It was very, very, I don't think there was a seam pass.
No, there was a seam pass on one of the power plays, not the first power play, you're right. You're right. But there was a seam pass at some point in one of the power plays.
But we're meant to be talking about scoring chances, 100%. Not seam passes.
Well, because the best scoring chance they had was on the first power play, and it was a shot from the point, Filip Hronek ringing it off the post, right? Outside of that, the power play really didn't generate much of anything. So 7 minutes and 59 seconds of underwhelming performances, but all it takes is 1 second, and it came through, make it 1-0. And then Filip Hedl finally experienced what it's like to have a Canucky moment.
He became
a Canuck tonight. And I get it. Like, I like ambition. I like players that, you know, aren't afraid of trying to skate the puck out. But in that situation, skating the puck in front of the net loses
control. Or if he was trying to pass it to Forsberg,
he's trying to do, like, you know, just doesn't make a good play. And as luck would have it, Toffoli gets three cracks at it, and eventually it goes in. And Forsberg almost stops it, and he's trying to cover for Demko. So some bad luck, too, for Filip Hedl, that the one mistake he makes ends up in the back of his net. But you give Toffoli credit, because you make a mistake, he can poach, and he did that tonight.
Yeah, even we talked about it earlier, like even on the entry, like he peels away and he reduces, he goes back to behind the red line, and it's like four or five guys coming up the ice with full speed for San Jose. And like, I would just like, even if it's just fake presence, like at least come to the top of the circles and try to usher the puck in a certain direction. But they were able to just come free and clear. They get the entry. And, yeah, like Hronek does a good enough job there to hold the puck against the wall. And it pops out to Hedl. And, yeah, just overdoes it, whether he's trying to pass or skate it out. And Toffoli backhand two attempts there, going to the far post, and then has enough time to flip the hips and gets that shot across Demko, past Demko with 90 seconds to go.
Yeah, and next thing you know, it's 1-1, and the Canucks are going to overtime. And, you know, the Sharks had a couple chances in the last minute, too, and Demko made a couple saves, and he was fantastic tonight for the Canucks yet again, and probably the main reason they did end up winning this hockey game, get to overtime. And we talked about this before, but I love that Tocchet sent Hedl out with Drew O'Connor for the first shift, and Hedl didn't look like a guy who was shaken. Like, he got a chance right away, and San Jose had a 2-on-1 going back the other way, which is what happens on overtime. But then he makes another good play where they get the puck, go the other way. It's late in the shift, but he still skates hard. He gets his own entry, makes a nice pass to Drew O'Connor, who draws the penalty shot.
And then he pulls the JT Miller with the JT Miller-esque move, as many people have texted in the penalty shot, and gets the 19th OT penalty shot goal in NHL history.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, and the trivia you did, Ben Hutton being the other one.
I thought it would be a clever trivia question.
Yeah, it wasn't.
It was not. Because Shorty said it on the broadcast. And for an update on all things happening,
he did text us.
He did text us, and he wants us to read it on the air. He says, thanks for watching.
Well, you left out the last word.
It was words of encouragement.
It's like a dark hole is what essentially what he said.
it was words of encouragement.
Let's leave it at that. You can probably figure it out yourself. But yeah, that was from John Shorthouse, and that's the update. All right, we'll get to more of your texts in a moment. Let's go to the phone boards. Let's go to Delta, where we have Juggy on the line. Juggy, what's happening, buddy? What do you have for us tonight?
G'day, mate.
I had
to get it in.
Yeah, man. I love it.
Well done.
I don't blame Hedl for that Toffoli goal. I think we all fell asleep during that game, man. That was quite the snooze fest for a bit there. But, you know, when I look at Pettersson, I mean, 5-1-1 in their past seven, by the way, which is really crazy considering the fact that there's been so much noise and, you know, turnover at the same time. But which makes it all the more frustrating that, you know, they're 5-1-1 and it's like, you know, you would hope that Pettersson would have more of a say in how the game is sort of happening and coming together. But unfortunately he's, you know, it seems like he's really lost right now. But if, you know, for me, I honestly would not trade him, to be honest. Like, I would try and figure it out with him. Like, I think the percentage that you used was 70-30. So I would definitely, you know, rely on the sort of 70% of him trying to figure it out for sure. Do you guys think that he should go to the Four Nations, you know, in terms of him getting to play with other wingers there? See how that sort of works out, if it sort of tells them more about where he's at with his game, or do you think he should take the time off? Thanks guys so much.
Yeah, Juggy, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. And you know, on the like on trading Pedersen, like, we'll see what happens in the offseason, right? Like, and even by the trade deadline, whether they make that trade or not. But
I think, you know, I'm going to flip takes here. I know we've said they'll be like, oh, I'll trade anybody. But you know what? I'll be the band on the Titanic, man. I'm going down with the iceberg. Let's go. Let's do it.
You're like, I'm not doing it.
Screw it.
You're just staying with it.
I'm playing the violin, baby. Somebody else can turn the lights out. I'm all in on it. He's finding his way back.
Yeah, okay, so on
I'm joining a couple of texts here. Sorry, can I just read a couple of texts? RJ in North Delta. Pedersen's clearly hurt. Can't push off the left side. Can't move the puck across his body. He's actively gliding. He's winning the board battles and doing all the intangible things right defensively. You don't put up 89 to 103 points back-to-back years. Fans are impatient. He'll be fine. We really need to take it easy. Paul from Surrey also calling people out. All these bandwagon fans beg Pedersen to sign the contract. Go back, check the tapes, boys. A little adversity, potentially an injury even. And that's all it takes. We were all over Alvin for getting him at a discount as well. Fans here will pick at it no matter what. If you're a true fan, get behind the kid.
Yeah, hey, fair enough. It's good to see. It's good to see it because like it's so overwhelmingly negative, and it's nice to see people be like, you know what, I still believe, or at
there
least
you, go.
You have faith. You know, I'm with you. So take out your. Somebody else was like,
yeah,
you know, somebody sat needs an intervention for believing that Pedersen can find his game. It's like, okay, sure, whatever, man. Like it's everyone has their opinion.
You host the party, I'll be there,
man. Yeah, we'll hang out. Let's do it. But I mean, like I said, like, do I have faith that he's going to find his game this year? I know.
I'm at like
I don't have a lot of faith.
I'm at like 10%.
Yeah, my percentage, like I said, like I think I believe he's going to find at least a level where he gets to a point per game. Is that going to be in Vancouver or not? I don't know the answer to that either, Bick. I don't know. Like the organization, Bick, I want to say, do they come close to trading him for Natchez? I mean, that depends on who you ask.
But what number would you put that you just believe he'll get back to his level?
Like I said, I think it'll be like 70%. He's going to find it. Again, I don't know if
that was your negative number, though. Is there like the positive version?
The positive version. Yeah. Oh, the positive version? Like his ceiling? Probably like 50%.
Right.
You know? Like, I think he'll, like, there's too much talent.
I'll say 92.6%.
Is that how much you got paid? Is that the contract?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. I like it.
I'm all in.
All in. Big
well, so. I'm 92.6% in.
Almost.
So 92.8? 92.6.
92.6, I think.
Yeah. No, it's 90.8, 11.6. And 90.
Is 11.6? I don't know. Bick, you, whatever.
Yeah.
Sure.
92.8.
There you go. So you only, you know, 7.2% off.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're almost at near certainty.
But
that's
as
fine.
Far as Juggy's second question, should Pedersen go to Four Nations?
Unless he actually needs a time off for an ailment, which we don't know again, right? I'd say, okay, take the time off. Grasping at straws, because that's all we have left to do on Pedersen. We're literally grasping at straws. And in the straw grasping I'm doing here, this is the best I can come up with. Maybe a change of environment and a different situation and just getting away from Vancouver, getting away from this, and perhaps having some success and fun can just rewire his brain a little bit. That's all I got. That's all I got. Do you have anything different? Do you have anything along those lines?
I'm going to be a hypocrite here. Because like amidst the Quinn Hughes conversations.
Right.
Of like, oh, should he go? My thought has been like, if Quinn Hughes is able to play, like, let the dude go, man. Like, it's such an honor to always represent your country.
Quinn is clearly banged up. He has a lower body injury, you can tell. Or like a mid-body injury, whatever it is. And he has a hand injury. The best thing for him is to take 2 weeks off, man. Like, honestly, the best thing for him is to take time off.
Totally.
But for the long-term happiness of Quinn Hughes, do whatever you want. Like, that's where the team's at. It's like, do whatever you want.
Just in general, like, I will echo what Patrick Alvin was talking about earlier today. It's like, look, we trust the guy. If he feels like he's ready to go, then go, right? Like, go represent your country. I think that's awesome. You get so few opportunities given the nature of the NHL. You never know what might happen. So if you have a chance to put on your country's jersey, go do it, man. Like, I'm pro all of that. On top of all the things you just mentioned there, like, keep Quinn Hughes happy. And at the same time, if you really lean into the bit and you really believe Pedersen is really going through something, look, to me, it makes all the sense in the world to just take the 2 weeks off, see what happens. At the same time, I'm like, you know what? Why don't we get a test group and a control group here? Like, Is the Canucks environment the control environment, or is the Sweden environment the test environment? Like, let's see what he looks like in another spot. Like, that part of my brain is just interested to see, like, okay, if he goes there and it still looks bleak, then we might be like, okay, like, he's really going through something.
Yeah.
If he goes there and it's like, he looks awesome again, then it's like, okay, the problem's here. the problem might be internal. On top of, like, you've got to be better on top of that. But, like, there might be something in the water here that's like, yeah, we got to sort this out immediately because he can look like that.
Yeah.
So that part of me is like, forget what the health looks like. Just, dude, go, and I want to see what you look like in this new environment.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, right? Like, I'm with you on it. With Quinn, it's like, you take the time off, but whatever makes you happy and if keeps us cool, do whatever you need to do, right? But with Pettersson, that's where I'm at, right? That's where I'm at. Dino says, I'm trying to imagine what an intervention would look like. Sat, we love you, but your positive talk about PD is killing us. Please get help. That's Dino texting in. Science. Yeah.
Oh, man. It really is all Pettersson text right now. I'm trying to find the last non-Pettersson text.
I know. It's... Big P text in, and, you know, and he says, stop letting him be a spoiled brat. Treat him like an adult that's not producing. Trade him now. So, I mean, there's a lot of that, right? There's a lot of that.
I feel like trading him is not treating him like an adult. It's like, it's... You're someone else's problem. If you want to treat him like a problem, like, solve the problem internally.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, like, you do need to have resolve sometimes. And at the same time, like, there's a fine line. There's a fine line between resolve and patience and also knowing when to say bye. Like, knowing when you have to cut bait. And right now, a lot of fans are willing to cut bait, want to cut bait. So, we'll see.
By the way, what's the good group? Is it the control group or the test group?
The good group?
Yeah.
Control group. I mean, there's a placebo group. No, we're not doing that. Control group.
Dino texts us, we need control PD.
You need a control PD.
A double blind PD.
I don't know.
I don't know which one's the good. I guess it depends. Like, do you want to be in the placebo group or not? I guess you want to be in the control group because you still get paid the same, don't you?
Chris at Maple Ridge. People still have faith in a radio host that thinks he's Crocodile Dundee on air. Fair enough. Just kidding. This one says, a little Sam Halam is all he needs.
We'll see. This one, Pine Rider. What are the odds a star player entirely loses their game for a full year and can still resurrect their career playing at a high level? Pretty darn long, as far as the odds here. Man, like, I was chatting about this with you the other day, off air, in the group chats here. Like, you go through the list of players, and this is why I do kind of feel like I'm swinging around on the idea of, like, you know what, I'll go down with the ship. Like, the list of dudes that have done the things that he has done through a handful of seasons is, like, really, really short across the history of the NHL.
Yeah.
Like, through the first six seasons, if you just, like, limit it to 400 games played, 150 goals, 225 assists, plus 30 in the first six seasons in the history of the NHL, okay, which he cleared all those marks. It's 34 players that have done it.
Yeah, the only two players that come to mind, one was...
The two guys I brought up to you?
Well, Barry Peterson, Canucks traded for. Mm-hmm. He had incredible years at Boston. Then he had injuries and just never found his game again. Yashin, but he was older when he had the drop-off, right?
Yeah, but he didn't clear any of those marks
that
I mentioned.
No, he didn't. Exactly. Yeah. So it's like it's nearly unprecedented, but that doesn't mean it can't happen. There's always a first, and hopefully it's not Pettersson. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get more of your thoughts coming in, more reaction from Canuck players. Plus, we'll hear from Ian McIntyre, and we'll talk about other players too. That's coming up next on the Canuck Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery, Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Dewar out the left wing side. Carrying top of the zone. Passes right boards. Thrun with a one-timer fought off by Demko through some traffic. Dewar gets it back left wing to Wallman to the line. His long shot is stopped by Demko. Rebound in front. What a save by Demko. He kicked out the left pad. And Rob Carl Grundstrom, who tried to tuck it past him on the backhand. And it's still 1-0 Canucks.
And that was vintage Demko. What a save with the left pad.
Thatcher Demko on top of his game tonight, helping the Canucks win 2-1 in overtime over the San Jose Sharks, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satir Shaw with Bick Nizar. And as always, get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to the phone boards as well coming up in a few moments, and we'll hear from some Canuck players. Plus, hopefully IMAC before this evening is done. Going to midnight because the game started at 7:30 here tonight. Now, yes, as much as the PD stuff is there, I get it. You know, I think we spent a lot of time on it. I did want to spend some time on some other players too. Ahmad texted in and says, please, can we talk Höglander? Monster effort from him tonight. That's from Ahmad texting in. I don't disagree. And there are a lot of good forechecking moments, offensive moments, and he's had those, obviously. But the moment that I like the best from him, Bick, and we wanted to talk about this during the first intermission, but there was so much else to talk about in a 0-0 game. There actually was, but yes, but nonetheless.
No, believe it or not, the first intermission, also Elias Pettersson intermission.
Yes, it was. But yeah, so a lot of things we had to get to and we got to, but I wanted to talk about Höglander defensively in this game and in his own zone. There was one play specifically in the first period, and we've talked a lot about Höglander being reliable and being in the right spot and doing the things the coach wants. We know he can be good along the wall, but do you understand your responsibilities? And he made a really good play. He had awareness. There was a puck carrier for the Sharks by the down the goal line towards the near boards, and he's by the circle inside the hash almost, and he's looking at the puck carrier, and he's heading towards the middle of the ice between the hash marks where the coach calls the rail. Imagine a line across the two face-off circles in the offensive zone.
Like a railroad across the hash marks.
Exactly. So that's where they need their forwards to be when they're in their own zone to protect the middle of their net. And he recognizes that there's a Sharks player behind him. He shoulder checks him, and he pops over to the rail, and a pass comes across. He picks it off, and he helps the puck get out of his own zone, and the Canucks get a rush going the other way. If he can do things like that consistently and not make those mistakes, he should earn more minutes. And I agree with Ahmad. I thought he had a strong game offensively. But those are the types of things, Bick, that if he does repeatedly, there's no reason why he can't move up the lineup.
And he's the one that got bumped up, right? The Garland was...
He got banged up a bit.
Yeah, he was in and out through a stretch. You know, did come back in the third, a couple of shifts late as well for Connor Garland. But Höglander was one that filled in here. And his best offensive opportunity came was on the play we talked about with Elias Pettersson picking off a pass and sliding it to Höglander. The shot ultimately gets blocked, but it looked like a heavy one-timer slap shot there from Höglander. So, again, popped a little bit as far as the offensive moment. That was his only shot attempt through the evening. But, yeah, like 10:53, and, you know, O'Connor's the one that got to bump up. And if you're looking for other candidates of who's next, yeah, like it's probably Höglander earning his spot here.
Yeah, and we'll see if he gets that chance, but I do agree. Chris in Maple Ridge also says, Hoagie, another great game. A bull in a china shop fighting for the puck and trying to make every second count of his ice time. And I saw that from him tonight. And we'll see where Garland's at because he left the game, came back, and then you noted how on the first power play, he came out first, made one play, got banged a little bit, and then left right away. But he came back and played.
Little bit is the word there. Yeah,
yeah, so we'll see where he's going to be at health-wise for the game against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Sorry, I was just trying to bring something up here. Just going back to Höglander, offensive zone possession time. Leading the way is not Höglander. He was fifth highest for the Canucks tonight, 36 seconds for offensive zone puck possession time.
Mm-hmm.
Nils Höglander. Who do you think was leading the way?
Puck possession time tonight?
In the O-zone.
Oh, time-wise? Oh, Hedl?
Hedl was second with 42 seconds.
Okay.
So it's second in the game and second as a Canuck.
Okay.
It's a 20-second gap between Hedl and the person in first.
Was it Hronek?
Hronek was third with 41 seconds.
Well, I'm getting everybody but...
I'm going to make you answer it. I'm going to keep saying wrong answer.
Who had the most...
Who's occupied the most airtime so far tonight?
Pettersson?
Yeah.
He handled the puck the most?
A minute, two.
Wow.
I think some of that's going to be power play, obviously.
Well, like I said, like if you look at this is the funny thing, right?
Yeah.
We talked about this in the first segment of the show. Pettersson controlled 70% of the shots almost tonight, right? But here's the problem. Of actual shots on goal, he was on the ice for zero shots on goal, 5-on-5. Zero.
Great night in the spreadsheets.
Yeah, there were 9 attempts when he was on the ice, 4. 4 against when he was on the ice. So not much happened at all.
There you go.
But
did a job.
Yeah, but yeah.
2 points part, tonight, did a job.
Part of the job. There's another part of
going
it as
on
well.
Happy.
Right?
Hey, boys, 2 all right. Points, step on the plane. Like, yeah, let's go.
All right. Let's go back to the phone boards. Let's take a phone call or two here before we get out. Let's go to Christina in Vancouver. Christina, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hi, it was just more about the emotional side of it. Everyone, you know, was really upset with Pettersson about how he's playing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's great. Yes, he should play better. But I would just like to say, if anyone's ever been bullied in a workplace before and really had somebody bag on you and always bring you down, it shoots the hell out of your confidence. It takes a lot, a long time to get back to where you think you know what you're doing, even if you were really good at it and really confident at it before. It just emotionally damaging. So, I don't know, maybe a little bit of time and a little bit of confidence building elsewise might help him out.
Yeah, fair enough. Thanks for the phone call. Christina calling in. Thanks, Christina. That's Christina from Vancouver. So I think alluding to, obviously, the relationship with JT not being where it's at. Again, we don't know all the details about everything that happened or didn't happen. And there have been so many rumors and so much speculation about the situation. But obviously, as Rutherford pointed out, the situation became untenable mm-hmm. between Pettersson and JT. And could that be affecting it mentally? Perhaps at some level, as far as how that's gone. Is there an injury, perhaps, at some level? Did he lack preparation? Yes. Like, there are a lot of factors. When a player struggles this much, Bic, I don't think it's just one thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of the same thing we saw the Canucks earlier. Yeah. It's like we like to point, you know, I know the smoking gun is what people look for.
Yeah. In this scenario. Yeah. You know, we've chatted about this with Yannick as well on the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's been adamant. It's like, you know, look, bullying and things like of that nature, like that's upon everyone and leadership and everyone to, like, stop that.
Yeah.
Of course, like, stand up for yourself and all these things, but, you know, and we've heard this from multiple players, like, that's just, like, a stretch too far of, like, oh, it's bullying. Rift, certainly.
Yeah.
Two guys not getting along, certainly, but to the level of, like, bullying, that just, like, sounds too far for me.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. At the same time, and we asked, Reach asked Patrick Alvin directly about the JT situation today. A bit more about, like, you know, beyond the whole Pettersson JT thing, and he didn't want to answer it. He said that's private between the Canucks and JT. And until somebody goes on record or is willing to confirm, it's hard to know exactly what happened. But here's a fact. Things were bad enough that the Canucks punted on JT Miller after signing him and him coming off a massive season where he had 100 points and was a spectacular playoff performer for them. So obviously things were pretty bad for them to get to the point they got, right? But what was the true nature of it? Maybe one day. Maybe one day somebody writes a book. And maybe one day. Maybe
the tell-all we'll book, man. The
tell-all book, and we find out exactly what happened. All right, let's go back to the phone boards. Let's get another one in. Let's go to Gary in Maple Ridge. Gary, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Is that me?
Yes, it's you.
I've talked to Eddie about this, and I want to put a little bit of a kink in this whole thing about Petey. Can you imagine MacKinnon being a grinder? Can you imagine Connor McDavid being a grinder? They're not grinders. They score goals. Now, I'm 66, so I know. I remember watching Tocchet play hockey. He is a grinder. He scored goals, but he also did something else that we don't do very much of. Now, just between you and I and the rest of your listeners, why don't we leave the kid alone and maybe, just maybe, he'll start scoring some goals because he's not a grinder. You can see that. All he does is opposite hitting people. Chatel, he's more like the guy that we just got. It's Philip Chatel or Chatel. As far as I'm concerned, I feel sorry for the kid because he's trying to do what he's doing. And he is, as I told Eddie over the phone, it looks ugly out there. And by the way, I watched the game, the entire game, and it's slop. They're winning 2-1, but Tocchet hockey is ugly. It really is. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the phone call. Amrit was texting in too and talking about how Rick Tocchet had the team reverting back to being conservative in the third period, not going for offense. The coach always talks about pushing forward. So how much of that is coaching? How much of that is the players? Who knows? But a similar, you know, refrain and issue, obviously, that we have seen with the team here so far. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Before we get to IMAC, let's get to some player audio as well after the victory. And one player who got the game-winning goal was Drew O'Connor, scored on a penalty shot, and the only other Canuck to do so, like John Shorthouse told us, was Ben Hutton in the past, 20-some years.
Sorry, I wasn't listening. All right. Jeez. All right. I get it, everyone.
All right. Hey, listen, I just have to get you back for my Crocodile Dundee moment yesterday.
Good one, mate.
We'll leave it at that. All right. Here is Drew O'Connor after the game talking about scoring on his penalty shot.
Quite the win for you guys tonight. Maybe take us through that moment in overtime and your shot on net there.
Yeah, they had a chance down our end. Obviously, we got a big save, and then just tried to beat my guy up the ice. Phil made an awesome play to get it to me. Got a little bit of a stick on it, but yeah, it was nice. It was a nice play by Phil to get it over to me.
Bit of a goalie battle through it all the way to that third period, especially. But what can you say about the team's performance as a whole?
I thought we did a great job defending hard. You know, we had a couple big penalty kills. They got the late one, but I don't think we let it catch us off guard. We kind of responded well, and it was a big 2 points.
Couple games under your belt now. Where's the comfortability at with this group?
Yeah, I feel super comfortable. It's a great great group of guys. They've been awesome to all of us so far. You know, me, Phil, Victor, and Petey welcoming us in. So it's been a lot of fun playing this week. Hopefully we can just keep this going.
You had a bit of a semi-break in the first period and you shot it there. You know, I was curious, did you know you were going to shoot in overtime or are you just waiting to read off the goaltender?
Yeah, waiting to read a little bit. I kind of had an idea that's what I wanted to do with it. It's a little bit easier when you can come in slow and kind of pick your spot like that. Would have been nice to score the breakaway earlier, but glad I got another chance at it.
That is Drew O'Connor after the game scoring shootout winner, penalty shot winning goal in overtime. And let's bring in the man we call the triple threat. He's going to close this one out. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre. Did we lose IMAC? Did you drop IMAC? All right, Eddie dropped IMAC. All right, well, you're going to have to call him back again, and we'll bring IMAC back on in just a moment.
Goodness.
We just lost IMAC.
That was incredible.
All right.
I think Eddie was just vibing to the Bruce Springsteen. We went from Springsteen to Hendrix there. That was a fantastic 90 seconds there.
Yes.
Is that the new goal song, Dancing in the Dark, in the background there of that Drew O'Connor clip? Sweet.
Yeah.
By the way, are you... More trivia for you.
Oh, what do you have?
Who is the actress that was dancing in the dark at a Bruce Springsteen concert?
Actress?
Yeah.
Dancing in the dark? I don't know.
It was brought on stage by Bruce.
Recently? I don't know.
No, it was back in the 80s.
I don't know.
Friend star, Courtney Cox.
IMAC, do you know? Is Courtney Cox?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. What's going on, IMAC? Sorry about that.
Can you hear me? Yes. Am I there? Am I there?
You are there, yes. We got you.
IMAC, can you please turn your phone down?
Oh, sorry about that.
I'm joking.
Loudly.
I'm joking.
This last half hour, when you go late, it's hard on Eddie. Because he's been there
all
day.
It's hard on all of us. It was a tough nil-nil through 40 minutes there.
I actually didn't find it that tough. I thought it was an pretty entertaining game to watch, actually, for 0-0.
Are we talking about the same game tonight?
I mean, hey, there were chances at both ends.
There
was a goaltending duel. The Canucks, you know, they need to play better. It was probably the poorest of the three games since they made the big trades on Friday. But yeah, I was still entertained.
Yeah, I mean, there were some good moments. I mean, there were a couple of, breakaways and, you know, Filipino was doing his thing in the first period. But as far as what your takeaway is, like, what was your overarching takeaway from the game here tonight?
Well, the most positive thing is that Thatcher Demko was outstanding again. And, you know, he said after the 3-0 shutout on Tuesday that, you know, you got to do it again because it was one game, and now he's done two in a row that arguably are his best two games since he came back. So, you know, two games is not a season. It's not even a whole week. But let's see how he does. I would think he'll play again on Saturday, unless they want to, you know, give Kevin Lankinen a game before Lankinen goes off to the Four Nations. But I think Demko can go three in a row. So, you know, that was really positive because as I said on Tuesday, if he is back, to his level. And even if he's not at the level he was at last year, but if he's back to, say, his career average level, that's a game changer for the Canucks in this playoff race. Like, that's probably, Demko alone is at that level, is a half dozen points between now and the end of the season from what he was before. So that was very positive. I thought Drew O'Connor was really good. I thought the most disappointing thing to me was not Bic, that the game was 0-0 through 48 minutes. It was that after the Canucks finally took a lead, they did, even though this group has been re-energized and there's a different feeling, there's a different vibe around the team for sure since the big trades last Friday, it still fell into its season-long pattern of trying to defend a lead by going in full retreat. And shots were 12-1 for San Jose after that point. And I think it was 8-0 in the last 5 minutes. And of course there was a power play in there as well, but still, you know, one of the first things, it might've been day one of training camp that Rick Tocchet first mentioned meeting pressure with pressure, and the Canucks have just failed so many times to do that. They were good. I thought they were good with the lead against Colorado on Tuesday, but way too passive and on their heels tonight, because, you know, Vanecek had a great game in goal for San Jose, as did Demko for the Canucks, but they were vulnerable. Like, when the Canucks got into the offensive zone and, you know, worked the cycle, worked their forecheck, they had the puck an awful lot, and they were generating chances. Their shooting wasn't good enough, I'll give you that, that they needed to find a way to get more pucks on net with, especially early on with all the zone time that they had. But they just, you know, I don't know. I understand part of it is just human nature. Now you're up, you lead on the road, you start looking at the clock and thinking, okay, let's just not make a mistake. Let's get through these last 12 minutes. But, you know, even a team like San Jose, who we know is not very good, but they have a ton of speed and talent. And if you play backwards, all of that speed is coming towards your net shift after shift. And it's not the way to try to preserve a lead. And the Canucks couldn't do it, giving up the tying goal. But I thought it was a great shot to cap a really good game by Drew O'Connor. And you know, these guys are so new that we all fall into this trap where we want to make a big judgment on a guy based on a really small sample. But for somebody I knew from playing in Pittsburgh as more or less just a name, just one of those guys who's around the NHL and they stick around and they build a career, but you never notice them. But he plays a really solid, dependable, heavy game on the boards. I presume he's got significant limitations, which is why he hasn't scored more to this point. But he looks like a really good pickup. And tonight he had 6 shots on net. I liked that he got in Jake Walman's grill in the third period, even though it ended up costing the Canucks a penalty. I liked that he got on Walman because Walman had gone after Garland a couple of times. I think he's another guy that they probably need to re-sign, much like Marcus Pettersson, although hopefully for something a little less than 5.5 per year for 6 years.
In previous iterations, when Quinn Hughes would be out of the lineup, it would be, you know, we'd be anticipating 5-alarm fire. But it feels like a steady baseline all of a sudden here for this group, and they've done the job and 5-1-1 this last little stretch. But more importantly, you know, back-to-back wins without Quinn Hughes in the lineup, and I'm excited to see like what the ceiling is now with when Quinn Hughes returns into the lineup.
Yeah, well, the new Pettersson has had such a stabilizing factor. By the way, the young Pettersson wasn't as good tonight either.
Agreed.
Although he was, you know, fine for third pairing, and a guy who's still just learning a ton every time he plays a National Hockey League game. I'm talking about the younger Elias Pettersson. But Marcus Pettersson has really stabilized them. And what it does as well, and I'm trying to think whether it was Tocchet or Pat. I think it was actually Patrick Alvin, because I spoke to him earlier today about the Pettersson contract and a little bit about Hughes. But he said, you know, when you can slot guys in the right position. And so now they have Marcus Pettersson, which, you know, not that I think on form that Carson Soucy was going to be in the top four again, but it just allows now you've got Pettersson and Myers on what looks like it could be a really solid matchup pairing. You've got Philip Roenick. Right now he's with Forbert, but you'll probably be back with Hughes. At least that's how I would play it, because I think Pettersson and Myers look good together. I would go back to Roenick Hughes, and now you've got guys slotted on the third pair that you should have on the third pair. And if that's Forbert and Soucy, or if DPD continues to get some games, although I think that's unlikely once Quinn comes back, at least it makes sense. Like they've got some order now on their blue line. They still miss Quinn a ton, because how couldn't you? He's the best defenseman in the world right now. He leads the team in scoring by 25 points, which is crazy if you think about it.
Bonkers.
Including the seven games he's missed. Their defenseman leads the team in scoring by 25 points. And they really miss him on the power play. I would say Roenick has been disappointing to me anyways, because I thought, given a chance to be the fill-in number one, let's say, and we know he's not a number one, he's a really good number two, but I thought he might show a little more than he's shown. I don't think he's playing badly, and especially at 5-on-5, I think he's doing a lot of good things, but I thought he would maybe find a way to make the power play work a little better than it has with Hughes out. I know they got a goal tonight that technically was a power play goal, but look at the guys who were on the ice, you know, Dakota Joshua, a deflection from Pugh Suter. I think I heard Shorty say it was Joshua's third ever power play goal in the NHL. So
is that more about like
power play is missed him.
Is he like Roenick, as you just mentioned? Is it more like disappointing relative to Hughes, or just disappointing in general? Because he was the only one that was willing to shoot on the power play.
Yeah, well, I think just disappointing, and that I thought he would, with a chance to run the power play, I thought he could be a little bit more dynamic and would be more dangerous. Like, yes, he's willing to shoot, but he's also passing up shots as well. And I think, and this isn't just Roenick, but the whole unit is just really, it looks really static, right? There's not the movement. And they've got new guys as well. You know, Cheadle's been here for three games, so they're still getting to know who does what and who goes where. But it just has lacked any kind of dynamic quality. And I thought that Roenick, I figured that he would shoot, which more or less he has, but I thought he would be able to create more space as well. I thought he'd walk the line a little bit, and we really don't see that much from him, and I'd like to see him shoot more, because he's got an absolute, you know, bunker buster of a slap shot. I mean, often guys are ducking in front of it because he's got the hook on his stick, and sometimes it gets awfully high, but I mean, his shot scares opponents. You know, it's so heavy. I think he injured two guys last year, Roenick did, with his one-timer. So I'd like to see him shoot more. But I also just thought, and maybe this is a bit nitpicky, because as I say, I think he has done really, really well at 5-on-5. And it's a different role for him, of course. But I just thought he would make the power play a little more dangerous than it's been.
And, you know, I mean, that fair enough, right? Because the power play hasn't looked great. But, I mean, how much that also comes down to Pettersson not being Pettersson? I mean, there's no JT Miller either, who was a real fulcrum of the power play, right? So no JT, no Hughes. And, like, nobody's a threat. I mean, I know Hedo's trying, but, I mean, yeah. I don't want to spend, you know, we talk about Elias Pettersson all the time, EP40, and our text inbox tonight, Ian, despite the fact the Canucks won and the phone boards, it's been like 90% about Pettersson. Like, you know, to me, a lot of the power play comes down to him just not being a threat anymore.
Yeah, I think some of the power play comes down to that. I mean, there's only five guys on it.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, you know, the guy at net front and the guy in the bumper is complementing what the other three do because they've got the puck a lot. And Pettersson is one of those three. And he's just not, I mean, he had three shots tonight, but he doesn't seem to be willing to take his shot anymore. And I don't know why that is. We all have seen his speed limitations compared to previous years and that he just doesn't have the burst, any kind of explosiveness right now. So that's something that's a serious concern moving forward. So why is that? Is it the tendonitis that he talked about last year? We know that he needs to have a better summer this summer if he's still with the organization, or actually no matter where, even if he's not, he needs to have a better summer this summer than he had last summer. He has to get stronger. His leg strength has to improve. He has to somehow get a little bit of acceleration back in his feet. But the power play really doesn't require that. The power play is all about, you know, hands and puck movement and shooting and the release and angles. And that doesn't really involve explosiveness unless you're, you know, retrieving pucks. And that's not really his job either on the power play. So that part's disappointing, but I don't see that it's any different than what we've been talking about. I don't think he was, for instance, any worse tonight than he has been a lot of games. And maybe that's an indictment. I don't mean it to sound snarky. It's just I didn't see that he was necessarily, as I say, any worse tonight. I mean, he has to be better. He knows it. Patrick Alvin knows it. Rick Tocchet knows it. His teammates know it. And we're all going to wait and see if he can be better. And if he's not, then it's a real conundrum for this organization, what it does before July 1st with a $92.8 million player who's performing at a 50-point pace.
Yeah, and the beat goes on, right? IMAC is kind of the same thing, and we're all waiting for the breakout if it's going to happen.
The Pete goes on?
Yeah.
The PD goes
on? I also think, you know, it's interesting as well that Pettersson is now the lightning rod. And I'm not saying it's unfair. Even Patrick Alvin thinks it's fair. You know, that what did he say on Saturday? That he's got higher expectations for Pettersson than anybody on the team. Mm-hmm. And Pettersson hasn't met it. So I get that. But I think we all knew as well that after all the drama and between Pettersson and Miller, that once Miller, who was, you know, a beloved player for the most part, like if you think about, I mean, the crowd hasn't been chanting Elias Pettersson or EP40 for the last 2 years, but they have been chanting JT Miller's name. So you knew that once Miller was traded, there's going to be, I even wrote about this for Sportsnet, a ton of pressure on Elias to step up his game. And I think I think it's part of the reality now that anytime the team doesn't perform well or doesn't win a game or doesn't, you know, score goals, that the focus now, the lightning rod is now Pettersson, that's where the criticism is going to be channeled until he does something to deflect it and to, you know, send that criticism somewhere else. He is underperforming for sure.
Yeah, and hopefully we do see a turnaround, and the question is, does it happen this season or not? But Ian, we look forward to seeing you in person on Saturday, early game, Canucks and Leafs, 4 p.m. puck drop at Rogers Arena. So we'll chat with you for sure on a Saturday evening.
I will look forward to that, and now I'm going to go watch that hockey game again because it was so much fun.
Go and enjoy. You're trying to put yourself to sleep. It's good. Ian,
I actually quite enjoyed it, I have to say.
No, it wasn't. I mean, there were some good moments, and we look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca, and we're going to leave you with this here, Ian. So that's what it sounded like on air when your call dropped.
Shout out to Joel in Vancouver, says, hey, that's the great exit music for Ian. We have the intro music. Yeah. So we might have exit music now.
We do have it. Did you drop him? You dropped him? You didn't allow him to say bye?
Oh, man,
you dropped him again?
Commit to the bit, man.
Oh, Eddie, come on.
Commit to the bit.
It sounded like you're wrapping it up with him. So
gotta commit to the bit.
For Eddie.
You play the music?
And then
he's gone.
Man,
so disrespectful.
We gone.
All right. He's Fast Eddie Gregory. He's Bick Nizar. I'm Satyar Shah. Thank you all for listening, participating. A lot of fun as always. We'll be back on Canuck Central tomorrow. Bick's back on the People Show. And we'll also chat on Saturday when the Canucks take on the Leafs. This has been the Canuck Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.